pleasure in righteousness.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Jim Fetzer. Jim is a college professor. We've had a number of fascinating discussions with him through the years, sort of lost track of him. He was doing his own radio program on Genesis for a time. Now he's doing it on another radio network. But he always has fascinating things to say. And even though he would come from what most people would consider the left, and I would come from what many people would consider the right, we are joined together in our common concern by what is taking place in our country. And there are some very real problems in our country. And it's amazing how we never really focus on these because the media doesn't talk about them. For instance, Robert McNamara died today. And, of course, everybody talks about the part he played in the Vietnam War. Nobody ever talks about the fact that he would not allow American soldiers to win the war over there. I was told personally by a four-star Marine general, General Lew Walton, and by William H. Sullivan, the American ambassador to Laos, we could have won the war any time in 2 years, pardon me, in 2 months, if we'd simply been allowed to attack North Vietnam. But, of course, we were never allowed to attack North Vietnam. We were actually indirectly financing North Vietnam. All during the war, we had no intention of trying to win the war. Our boys couldn't bomb the dikes in North Vietnam and flood the country and end the war, or bomb the electric plants up there, generating plants, or mine the harbor, or bomb the rail lines over which the supplies came, or stop the ships that were going up the Mekong River to supply the enemy. We weren't trying to win the war. But when you hear about Robert McNamara, you never hear that he was the permanent vice chairman of the Trilateral Commission. He was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. We never went to Vietnam to win the war. We went there to fight a war, to fight, send our boys to fight and bleed and suffer and die. And a war where we were financing the North Vietnamese, or we were financing the Viet Cong, or we were killing our boys in South Vietnam. And we never talk about that. We never talk about Robert McNamara, who sent our boys over there intentionally and would not allow them to win. Because he was an internationalist. He was part of this little cabal that runs the world. But this is not going to be mentioned. And, of course, tonight we're going to be talking about the fact that Sidney Dick Cheney was running a murder incorporated out of the White House. Much has been written about this. I thought we'd start out talking about Pat Tillman, a man who I consider is a real hero. Not necessarily because he did anything heroic, other than that he gave up a $3 million contract to play professional football after September 11, 2001, to go to Afghanistan because he wanted to fight to defend America. And, of course, you read the book written by his parents, or you hear the message they're putting out. They think he was intentionally killed by our own government. And with that as a background, thanks very much for being with us, Jim.
It's a great pleasure to be with you again, Stan.
Well, you pick up the story from there. Now I'm going to be quiet for a while, which is hard for me to do, but then it's hard for you to do as well. Jim is very articulate. You go right ahead and tell the story.
Let me just make a comment about the Vietnam War, because the only explanation I ever got for why we were there was presented by Walter Cronkite during a half-an-hour program on CBS in 1968, as I recall, and he showed a map of the continental shelf off of the Vietnamese coast. and explained how it was believed to be a vast repository of oil and how the great international oil companies had already divvied it up. Now, that program appeared...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You go right ahead.
Yes. And that was the show was broadcast exactly one time, and then it was lost, you know, into some kind of television or cyberspace, never to appear again. But I would notice every now and then after the war had ended, a little item might appear here one day in the paper or there another about one of the big multinational oil companies having leased one of those gigantic tracts. And, Stan, I tell you, that's the only reason I can imagine we were actually there. The Vietnamese were fighting a war of nationalism to unify the country. The Chinese had, and the Vietnamese were fiercely opposed to one another. And it really had nothing to do with communism, although that tends to be a claim that is made by the big corporations when their profit margin is affected. For example, when Castro nationalized the United Fruit and Anaconda Holdings in Cuba, or when Hugo Chavez has nationalized properties of American corporations in Venezuela, they're doing so to benefit the people of Cuba and the people of Venezuela. And any time a foreign leader cuts into our profits, the claim is made that they're communists. But that's the way they define it. A communist is anyone who cuts into their profit margin. And when you trace, the history of the United States involvement around the world, we find this pattern being played out again and again and again. And it doesn't matter whether the government is democratically elected or not. Salvador Allende, for example, in Chile, was a democratically elected government, but it was also a government with a Marxist orientation who wanted to have a lot of programs to benefit the people. We went down and ran a very slick operation to take him out, and he was machine gunned in his own palace. And similar things have happened in Guatemala and Nicaragua and El Salvador before we even get over to Southeast Asia, where we have, killed and bombed more people. One of the great atrocities of all time in Vietnam and in Laos and Cambodia, where we weren't even, in terms of international law, entitled to be. So, I have a somewhat different take than yours. Smedley Butler, who was the celebrated Marine Corps general who received two Congressional Medals of Honor, wrote a book about his experience working in the military entitled War is a Racket, explaining how his forces, the Marine Corps, had been used over and over and over again to benefit big business, the corporations and the bankers, and that he was sick of it. It's a little piece. It's only about 60 or 80 pages long, but I recommend everyone ought to read it because Smedley Butler knew what he was talking about.
All right, fine. Well, let me give you my reason why I have a slightly different opinion, although not that different. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we got started on today talking about Vietnam, and I just wanted to tell Jim. Jim thinks we were there for oil, and certainly that is one of the explanations that's given. The big oil companies wanted those massive oil supplies, but I would like to suggest that the best way to figure out why we were there would be to read what the people in charge said. And there was a man named McGeorge Bundy who wrote an article in the Foreign Affairs magazine in January of 1967. It was titled The End of Either Or. And he talked about, a lot of people say we've got a choice of guns or butter, guns or butter. Now this, remember, Jim, this is written to the elite who run our country. This is not for common people like you and me. And he says, it would be a very tragic thing for people to say that we had a choice of either guns or butter, either persistence in Vietnam or keeping our forces there indefinitely, because exactly the opposite is the case. We will certainly not be able to have the great new departures in health and education and welfare and truly bringing equality to our country. If we were to pull out of Vietnam, Vietnam keeps people occupied. The pullout of Vietnam, if Americans were to pull out of Vietnam, of course, it'd be a tremendous reaction against our domestic policies. The road forward at home is by persistence in Vietnam. And my contention is, and I'm simply going by what McGeorge Bundy said, who was in charge of the National Security Council and brought us into the war, is that they wanted this as a diversion as they transformed America. They put in, of course, the 65 immigration bill. They took God and prayer out of our schools during that era. It was certainly during that era that they passed a lot of legislation centralizing power, ever more power, in federal government, which I do not trust. I mean, some people think that we can trust government to give us a better life. I do not. I believe in individual freedom, and the only way we're going to do that is to restrict the power of government and have better people. But how are we going to do it? I don't know. I'll tell you what, we're sure losing that battle, but I believe we went to Vietnam as a great diversion, and all those boys died not fighting communism, but to bring socialism and Marxism to America. We're well along the way. But let's talk about things we can agree upon.
Well, so let me just add a few comments.
All right,
Dan,
fine.
I think what you have described has been replicated under the Bush-Cheney administration. I mean, we've had these wars, which I also believe were motivated by wanting to take control of Iraqi oil. Remember when Cheney had the big energy conference and he wouldn't even let us know who was there. I think he was asking all the big oil companies for their wish list, and that getting control of the Iraqi oil reserves was number one on the list. But also, of course, for the benefit of Israel by dismantling the most sophisticated Arab state, which had a wonderful public education system, a national health care system, an infrastructure that provide gas and water in a highly reliable fashion, antiquities and cultural artifacts dating back thousands and thousands of years. It's just terrible what happened here. But also, if the oil were to come out from the Iraq, it was going to go through Israel to get to ports in the Mediterranean Sea, where I'm very confident that the Israelis were going to be able to tap into their own supply, maybe even off of the meter. And then third, of course, there was the neocon agenda, which involved creating a massive base for exerting military and political influence outward from that geopolitically sensitive area in an effort to take advantage of what they saw as a unique historic opportunity, given the demise of the Soviet Union, for the United States, the sole remaining superpower, to create a global dominance worldwide by a string of bases encircling the globe, and they viewed the Middle East as the key.
I think you're absolutely right. It's certainly all we have to do is read the report from the neocons. You get it at the neocon website, which name escapes me right at the moment. But
Project
for the New American Century, and certainly in their pamphlet there called Rebuilding America's Defenses, they talk about how we have to have permanent stations, permanent bases in Iraq, or at least in the Middle East, whether Saddam Hussein stays in power or not. They weren't interested in Saddam Hussein. They were interested in permanent bases, and we took Saddam out. We had to have an excuse to go in there, but we couldn't let the American people know that the real goal of the entire American foreign policy is world domination, the American empire, as a stepping stone to their dream of a one-world government. At least this is my interpretation. And certainly everything I read convinces me that this is their ultimate goal, the destruction of freedom throughout the world, in the name of democracy, of course, and, of course, the imposition of a ruthless tyranny, not only in America, but throughout the world. And I think it's coming very rapidly.
Well, let me mention two points in relation to those remarks. One is that I think what we're talking about here is a background for why Pat Tillman was killed. And my take is that he was assassinated. He was murdered deliberately for political purposes because he had become disillusioned with the war in Iraq. And Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld were very worried that he'd return to the United States and become an NFL version of Cindy Sheehan, a macho guy who nevertheless was taking a strong anti-war stand, which was something they felt would threaten their conduct of the entire operation. But
and I'm not disagreeing with you, Jim, but I want you to tell our listeners why. I mean, first of all, we were told that this man, this corporal, had died a hero's death. He had led this charge up a hill. They gave him a silver star, for he died fighting the enemy. And then it turned out it was all a lie. And then, of course, then they said, well, it was just friendly fire. But, of course, what the American people have never been told, and I'm sure you can verify what I'm about to say simply by going onto the Internet, Pat Tillman was killed with three bullet holes very closely placed in his forehead. The Army doctor who did the autopsy on Pat Tillman's body said this is obviously a case of murder. He wanted to investigate it, and he wasn't allowed to. And the fact that most Americans have never heard that story, well, why haven't they heard that story, Jim?
Well, because of the massiveness of the domination of the media by the government and our intelligence agencies, it turns it into little more than a propaganda instrument to manipulate information that we receive in order to make us politically more docile and cooperative with any plan, no matter how contrary to our own interests it might be, that the administration wants to pursue. You're right in all your points about Tillman's death. The key to it is this tight group of three shots to the forehead fired from about 10 yards away, which had to be by someone who was extremely proficient with a weapon. This guy was an expert shot who took out Tillman, and it cannot, even given the nature of the wounds, have been an accident.
But, of course, the American people haven't been told that. His death was just an accident of friendly fire. First of all, they lied, and they gave him a Silver Star for an attack that never took place. Then, of course, they changed their story, and it was friendly fire, but they never told the American people about the three bullet holes in the forehead, closely, all close together, and fired from just a very short distance away. Or the pathologist said this is obviously a murder. How could they keep the American people from hearing this story?
Oh, Stan, you're so right across the board. I want to mention, and I'll quote from two different sources. One is actually a study of my own where I was so stunned by the revelation from Seymour Hersh that Dick Cheney had been running an executive assassination ring directly under his control from the vice president's office, that I had, based on my previous research, concluded that Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Rove had been the triumvirate who had arrived at the decision that Senator Paul Wellstone ought to be taken out. Where there were all kinds of political motivations at work here. The control of the Senate was at stake. He was the most outspoken critic. Cheney had even told him, warned him, threatened him personally that if he spoke out against them on Iraq, that there would be severe ramifications for him personally and for the state of Minnesota. I can't imagine a more severe ramification than to cause a plane crash that would kill him, his wife, his daughter, and three of his aides, not to mention the two pilots, or to deprive Minnesota of this charismatic, outspoken man who, by speaking out against Iraq, had actually increased his margin in running against Norm Coleman, which was extending to 6, 7, or 8 points just 10 days before the election. It was very evident that the vaunted Bush political machine was going to go down to defeat here, even though it had been widely known in the Capitol and widely reported on political blogs that he was their number one political target, that they intended to take him out. But most of us had assumed that when they talked about taking out Paul Wellstone, they meant it figuratively rather than literally. The research I've done indicates that, in fact, they took him out literally.
I think it's very difficult, Jim, for the average American to honestly believe that there are wicked people. And we're not talking about the whole government. We have a wonderful form of government. It's just that we've got some wicked people who are in positions of power, and you're never going to hear about it with the media. But it's very difficult for most Americans to begin to connect the dots. The question of the murder of Martin Luther King. Actually, there was a jury trial, which was actually instigated by the King family. It went on for 4 weeks. The jury heard the evidence. It was a suit they brought against a man named Lloyd Jowers, who had been hired by the Mafia as a front, which was working for the CIA, to kill Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was, they were going to kill him. They did kill him. There was a trial, And, of course, the jury found that the government was 70% responsible. Not a word in the controlled media. How could you do that? We have a four-tape set. My interviews with the people who attended the trial and who knew various aspects of the story. And then the murder of Bobby Kennedy and the murder of Jack Kennedy. But we could go on. Certainly our friend Gary Webb, who interviewed a number of times on my program, who had written about the CIA and drugs, and he ended up committing suicide by shooting himself in the head twice because he wanted to make sure he was dead. Ladies and gentlemen, these sort of things, and we can give you example after example. We have a four-tape set on deadly assassins. But we're going to get back to Jim here in just a minute as he talks about the fact that they really do kill people. You go right ahead, Jim.
It reminds me of the death of an agricultural inspector by the name of Henry Marshall, who was sent down to Texas to check out what appeared to be imaginary cotton allotment.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets. A little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. 630-9796, or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Afghanistan. Occasional mention that he was part of the cover-up of the Pat Tillman's death, but they never go into the background. In other words, yes, they did say it was a matter of, you know, heroism, and they gave him the Silver Star and the Purple Heart, and they promoted him, and they built him up as a hero, and then it turned out it was all a lie. And they knew it was a lie. And the military doctors said this was obviously a case of murder, and they were ordered not to pursue it, and to the military lawyers who were sending emails back and forth congratulating one another for covering up the truth about what happened. And the man who was a major, primarily responsible, the general now, was actually, according to Jim, there were hearings, and on 72 occasions he just couldn't remember the details of certainly one of this very important issue. How could a man who was that forgetful and senile be allowed to stay in the military, much less being given a command position in Afghanistan today? I mean, if he couldn't remember what happened to Pat Tillman and the details of his murder, and it was a murder, the doctors said it was a murder, but weren't allowed to investigate it, why would we reward that man? Or is it possible that when you're in the military, you do what you were told, even though you know it's wrong? Because that's how you're going to get promoted. Go right ahead, Jim.
Oh, you're so right, Stan, and there is more. On July 26, 2007, for example, the AP received official documentation that the doctors who performed the autopsy suspected that Tillman was murdered. High-ranking officers knew better at least 4 days before a nationally televised memorial service during which he was lauded as a war hero for dying while engaging the enemy. Members of Tillman's unit burned his body armor and uniform. His diary was never returned to his family, and its whereabouts are not publicly known. Now, I'm a former Marine Corps commissioned officer, Stan, and I tell you, this treatment of the personal property of a deceased is not proper procedure, and the missing diary, to me, is especially striking, since diaries are legally admissible as evidence in courts of law and should have attested to his state of mind. I'm afraid that his views deploring the war were becoming well known and had reached the ear of Donald Rumsfeld, and that it was decided something had to be done to shut him up.
What about his brother? Certainly we know that his parents believe that he was murdered, intentionally murdered, and his mother even wrote a book called Boots on the Ground and tried to go around and popularize the idea. She didn't get much in the way of publicity on that, and his father's been trying to tell people that they killed my son. But, of course, we don't hear about that. We still spend most of our time talking about Brad Pitt and certainly a football player who gets with four kids, who's having an affair with another woman, gets shot. And yes, it's a tragic situation. But here's something that really reflects on the entire structure of the American military, because if they would kill one of their own to silence him, is anybody in the military really safe? Go right ahead.
Well, Stan, I have Boots on the Ground by Mary Tillman, his mother, right here on page 216, 217. She's talking about her review of the autopsy exam. And I'll just read you a few passages here. She read where it indicates Pat's autopsy was performed on April 27, 2004. Then she saw where the date was July 22nd and wondered why it took so long for the coroner to complete and sign the document. The second page presented a description of his gunshot wounds. She didn't understand the information other than to recognize that much of his head was gone. She moved to the next page. Pat was 5'11", 71 inches tall, but the autopsy stated he was 73 inches tall. She can't understand how, concerning the nature of his head wounds, why he would measure taller. The autopsy said he was wearing a gold wedding band, but his ring was platinum, having a dull silver appearance. They recorded no distinguishing features, yet he had a scar under his right arm, the result of a rotator cuff surgery, a torn bicep from a football injury, a broken little finger on his left hand, residual scarring on his lungs from having had valley fever in college. None of those features are mentioned. Then she came to a section of the document that says medical interventions. It says that a 3¾ by 3½ inch area on the upper left chest is consistent with attempts at defibrillation. And she says, What world would you be doing defibrillating somebody who had his head blown off his body? Basically, all his brains were blown out the back of his head. So she's really profoundly disturbed that maybe they even did an autopsy on the wrong person.
Well, of course, they described these three bullet. Did they describe the three bullet holes closely centered in his forehead?
Yeah, that comes out in the course of the medical procedures. But, and of course the doctors, as you have observed, are going to conclude that this appears to be consistent with murder and not with an accidental death.
Well, basically, we have a book we used to carry it called Spite House, written by Monica Jensen Stevenson. She interviewed a number of the American soldiers who were assigned to kill deserters, American soldiers who deserted during the Vietnam War, and they simply went out and gunned them down. Lawsuits were brought and the book had to be destroyed. It is no longer available.
We'll stand at the end of the book, on page 312.
Hold that.
Yep.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, our guest this evening is Jim Fetzer. And Jim was a professor a long time. And, of course, when he got around to retire, instead of just putting his feet up and enjoying life, why he's trying to educate and inform the American people just exactly as I am, because I think that we both feel the sense of urgency with what's going on in the world today. Be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jim Fetzer. And Jim, before we go on and you describe what's written in the book, Boots on the Ground, by Pat Tillman's mother, the book, the message she tried to get out across America, but I don't think you're going to see her on most of the major television programs, mainline, because this is not a story they want the American people to know about, and certainly they don't want them to dwell on. I mean, who really killed Pat Tillman? But Jim, before we go on, do you have a website or any information you'd like to get out?
Well, I have a lot of articles on Op-Ed News. If anyone wanted to see the pieces I've been writing about issues of public interest, they could just put in Op-Ed News, Jim Fetzer, and you'll find about 30 of them. Also, I have the radio show, Stan, as you remarked earlier, and the archives of about 60 shows can be found at radiofetzer.blogspot.com. I discuss a wide range of issues, and anyone is welcome to visit there. The archives are free and open to the public at radiofetzer.blogspot.com.
Well, let's go on with your story about the, certainly about the Pat Tillman's mother's book, Boots on the Ground. You were saying that, go ahead.
Yeah, by page 312, 313, she's definitely got the case put together. She says, "We were told Pat died instantly once he was hit by what was apparently a three-round burst. The medic said Pat's wounds were not compatible with life. He was bagged as KIA. No attempt was made to assist him at the site. It was too late to help him. This is why the field hospital report has always been so disturbing. The reference to CPR being performed and transferring him to ICU for continued CPR is not believable. Why would anyone perform CPR on a man with no brain? Why would a dead man be sent to ICU for continued CPR? I believe, she says, this was done to make it appear as though an attempt was made to save Pat so there would be an excuse to destroy his uniform, as you can destroy the uniforms of wounded soldiers. The field hospital physician, Dr. Anthony Foley, told Marie and me over the phone that he didn't want it to appear as though he was ignoring Pat for the sake of the men who brought him in, but the soldiers who brought him in knew he was dead. Another thing that is very strange is that Rothke saw Pat's body a half an hour after he was brought to the field hospital. Pat was still in his uniform, boots, and RBA body armor. No attempt was made to perform CPR. You can't perform CPR through body armor. The second page of his field hospital report is dated April 25, 2004, and contains the notation, surgeon. It reads as though Pat died 3 days after he was brought in. The redacted documents in the Jones investigations, he was a general involved in covering it up, made it clear that high-ranking generals knew about Pat's fratricide within 2 days. Jones calls these particular witnesses, sir, indicating they are parallel rank or higher to Jones. Once she was able to view the unredacted documents, she discovered the general's identity. Both testified that they knew Pat's death was a suspected fratricide within 2 days. General Brown stated he received a call from Major General McChrystal, to whom you made reference earlier, Stan, because he's now in charge in Afghanistan and Pakistan. If McChrystal called General Brown by phone 2 days after Pat's death, he probably called the other recipients of his message as well. Vice President Eric Olson learned of the suspected nature of Pat's death from General Brown within a week. John Abizad, Central Command commander, must have been told, based on Yellen's statement to General Jones, the Army was placed in a position to spin the narrative of Pat's death to benefit the Army, the administration, and the war effort. Now, the observation I'd make here is that while they were given the impression that this was a fratricide, there is more than one form of that, because it could have been an accidental friendly killing, but it could also have been a deliberate, and I say all the evidence indicates that that is what in fact happened.
Well, of course, we've been told that the people in his unit were threatened and told never to tell what happened. Do we have any knowledge at all of that?
Why in the world would they be told that, Stan? I mean, unless there was something that desperately needed to be covered up.
Well, we know what happened with the people on the USS Liberty that was attacked in 1967, and they were told there were certainly 250 survivors, something like that, and they were told that if they ever revealed what's happened that day, they would be sent to Leavenworth for the rest of their lives, or worse. And, of course, they knew or worse meant they would be killed, obviously.
And when TWA-800 was shot down the Long Island Sound, apparently by a United States submarine that hit it with a missile, all officers came aboard that ship and made everyone aboard swear that they would never discuss it, too. It seems to be standard operating procedure, Stan, when you want to cover something up. In the military, you bring everyone together and have them swear they'll never talk about it, with threats that they're going to lose their pay and their rank and their benefits and maybe not even have VA care when they get out.
Well, of course, the ones, as far as the Liberty, they were told no uncertain terms they'd be sent to prison or worse, and they assumed they were going to be killed. And for 20 years, no one on the Liberty would ever tell what happened. Although the commanding officer was given the Congressional Medal of Honor, he was given it to in a shipyard where nobody would know, of course, and that was to buy his silence. But eventually, towards the time of his death, he did begin to come forward and tell the truth. And we have a great four-tape set of my interviews with the survivors of the Liberty, I suspect they did something similar. We know that the people in Pat Tillman's unit were told never to tell what they saw. If there's nothing to cover up, why are they covering it up?
That's exactly right. In fact, my research on JFK, where I published three books and produced a 4.5-hour video and chaired or co-chaired four national conferences, has led me to the indelible conclusion, including based upon over 100 conversations I had with his former mistress, Madeline Duncan Brown, who bore him a son, not his only child out of wedlock, but his only male offspring, that Lyndon Johnson was deeply involved in the assassination of JFK. But, of course, he was president when the Liberty was attacked, and it was Lyndon Johnson who covered it up for the benefit of the Israeli government, which, of course, had attacked this ship of the United States Navy so viciously in an obvious effort to sink it and kill all aboard.
Well, of course, I happen to believe that the Israelis were doing that at the behest of the of our own government. I have a Israeli patriot, Barry Samish, who does a wonderful program on that from the Israeli point of view, and he said that the man who was in charge there was a man named Peres. He was given tremendous advantages for getting the Israelis to try to sink the ship, but they really, if it was Washington, D.C., that wanted that ship down and wanted all the men killed as an excuse to go to war with Egypt. True or not, we will never know, and certainly Robert McNamara is never going to tell us the truth today. As you know, he died today, and I think that, of course, he's going to be in a very, very hot place for eternity.
Well, he I think, had to know that the Joint Chiefs were deeply dissatisfied with JFK. They felt he had not invaded Cuba against their unanimous recommendation. He'd gone ahead and signed an above-ground test ban treaty with the Soviet Union against their unanimous opposition, and now he was pulling our forces out of Vietnam, where they believed the stand had to be taken against international godless communism. I think McNamara had to know that the chiefs were complicit in the assassination of JFK.
I'm sure he himself was covering this thing up, along with J. Edgar Hoover and so many of the key people in the CIA as well. In fact, here Alan Dulles, who'd actually headed the CIA, who was fired by Kennedy, who hated Kennedy as a result of it, and who did they put on the Warren Commission? Alan Dulles.
And he attended more of the meetings than any other member of the commission?
I mean, it's the most incredible thing in the world. And Earl Warren, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, he was busy with the Supreme Court. He couldn't be there. But Alan Dulles was there, along with Gerald Ford. Of course, Gerald Ford was very well rewarded for his treachery. They made him President of the United States.
Gerald Ford, it turns out, was even responsible for redescribing the wound to JFK's back from his uppermost back, which was already an exaggeration, since it was actually 5.5 inches below the collar to the right of the spinal column to the base of the back of the neck. Just use the words to change it, Stan, to make the magic bullet theory more plausible.
But, of course, the man who really, of course, put over the magic bullet theory was a man named Arlen Specter, who was, of course, an assistant counsel for the commission. He ended up being well rewarded. He's a United States senator, Arlen
Isn't
Specter.
That something, Stan? Anyone who wants to know all the evidence that refutes the magic bullet theory, just enter reasoning about assassinations on Google. It's a presentation I actually made at Cambridge University during an international conference. It was peer-reviewed and published in an international journal. You can also find it on my public issues website, assassinationscience.com. Just scroll down to the big box entitled The Latest on JFK and you'll find it.
But there are so many examples of people actually being killed in the United States. And certainly we carry a book, Without Smoking Gun. It's the story of a lieutenant commander, naval lieutenant commander, who was involved with the initial autopsy on John Kennedy, not the one that was done at Bethesda, but the one that was done before that. He had pictures of it, and of course we have a gentleman we have interviewed a number of times, Colonel Marvin. He was actually contacted by the CIA and asked to kill Lieutenant Commander Spitzer.
William Pitzer, you're absolutely right.
Go ahead.
I had Dangerous Dan on my show, too, and Dennis David, who was a medical tech who was there and was a close friend with him, who watched the film he had in his possession of the autopsy of JFK and many frames, many photographs from it, too, which showed the massive blowout to the back of his head, by the way, which would not be portrayed in the official autopsy report, which Commander Humes was required at the order of his superior officer to rewrite and then burn the original.
So it's all a cover-up. They killed President Kennedy. They killed his brother. They killed Martin Luther King. Certainly there. Oh, in fact, there's a long list of people who've met very, very strange accidents. Can we prove them? Do we have anybody who is actually there? Well, yes, there's a lot of people who've actually come forward and even talked about the murder of John Kennedy, but we very, very seldom hear about that. Certainly the wonderful interview you had with Madeleine Duncan Brown, who was the mistress for Lyndon Johnson, who talked, and we actually have a two-hour interview. In fact, we have a two-hour interview with you, Jim, and a two-hour interview with Madeleine Duncan Brown. We put together in the same tape set called JFK Update, but she openly talked about the meeting that was held the night before of the assassination, and of course, who was there, sort of a who's who of the power structure planning the murder of an American president.
That's right. It was at the home of Clint Murchison, one of the powerful oil men. H.L. Hunt was there, though they were business rivals. J. Edgar Hoover was there. John J. McCloy, our former High Commissioner to Germany, former Chief Executive Officer at Chase Manhattan Bank, was there. You mentioned how Alan Dulles was appointed to one of the two slots on the Warren Commission assigned to civilians, where the other went to John J. McCloy, and he was there at the ratification meeting for the assassination the night before. Richard Nixon was there. He'd been driven out by a local Republican leader who worked in the same bank with Madeleine Duncan Brown. George Brown, Brown and Root Heavy Construction, now a subsidiary of Kellogg, Brown and Root, and in the past of Halliburton, was there when the Vietnam War went down. The Brown and Root was hired to dredge a new port at Cam Ranh Bay to the tune of about $1 billion, even though Vietnam has many magnificent natural ports and certainly didn't need one. Lyndon showed up late in the evening, and they all disappeared into a boardroom and had a meeting for 15 or 20 minutes, and after it broke up, he strode over to Madeleine. She expected to hear sweet nothings. Instead, he told her in a hateful tone of voice that after tomorrow, he wasn't going to have to put up with embarrassment from those Kennedy boys any longer. And then 6 weeks later, during a rendezvous at the Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas, when Madeleine confronted Lyndon with rumors rampant in Dallas at the time that he'd been involved, since no one stood to gain more personally, he blew up at her and told her the oil boys and the CIA had decided that Jack had to be taken out.
We live in a violent world, and most people find it so difficult to believe that this thing could go on, and nobody would ever be held responsible. One of the interesting parts of the whole story was happened to Hale Boggs, Congressman Hale Boggs. And he was a member of the Warren Commission.
He was, and he had his doubts. Indeed, many of the members had their doubts. In fact, they expected there was going to be a minority report, which they were assured would be the case, but in fact, when it was actually published, it was somehow excluded and lost track of. Hale Boggs, of course, was lost in a mysterious plane disappearance up in Alaska. Eventually, his body would be found, but it was one of those cases where you have to wonder what was going on.
Well, I'll tell you what was going on, because, of course, I don't know if you ever interviewed Nick Begich, but his dad was a congressman, and Nick has written extensively about HAARP. But Nick says, claims that the FBI knew where the plane was. They were getting, you know, these emergency calls, we're down, we're here, we're alive, you know, send help. And they would not allow help to go, would not allow anybody where it was, and they let them die. Hale Boggs had to be silenced.
I think that must be right. I mean, you understand, and the FBI is used to cover things up more often than it is to actually convict anyone of crime.
Well, they certainly did a pretty good job with Whitey Bulger up there in Boston. He was, for 20 years, he was an FBI informant. He killed 20 people during those years, tortured many of them to death. And then the FBI gave him the tip that the state officials were coming after him. He's still on the loose, one of the 10 most wanted men in the world, but on the FBI list. But the FBI had tipped him off so he could get away. And Whitey Bulger was covered up. They even sent innocent people to prison to cover up of Whitey Bulger's crimes because he was an informant for the FBI. Why would you cover for a murderer and torturer for 20 years?
Here's a good one for you, Stan. The Sheriff Rick Wahlberg of St. Louis County, in which Paul Wellstone's plane crashed, when he arrived at the crash scene at 1:30, observed members of an FBI rapid response team he knew personally, who told him that they had been there since noon. I personally spoke with Gary Ullman, the airport assistant manager who had discovered the location of the wreckage, who told me they'd been there at least since 1 o'clock. when I did a reconstruction to figure out when they would have had to have taken off from St. Paul in order to arrive in Duluth and rent cars to drive up to the location of the crash to be there by noon, they had to have taken off from St. Paul at the same time the senator's plane was taking off, Stan, which means these guys have amazing foreknowledge to know when they have to be at the scene of a crash that is yet to occur.
Well, I'll never forget, of course, that gentleman. I don't know whether you ever saw the strip of footage, but it was right after 9/11. I think it was Wednesday evening, and of course, there was this gentleman who was actually part of the emergency response team for September 11th, and Dan Rather was talking to them, and he said, "Oh yeah, we got here Monday night, you know, and I've been started working Tuesday morning."
Isn't that remarkable?
How could you possibly have got there Monday night when the attack didn't occur until Tuesday morning? That was very, very embarrassing. That a few people commented on it, and then everybody forgot it. And why would they have been there the night before?
And then if you want something to go wrong, if you want a catastrophe, say, because a hurricane is approaching New Orleans, even if you have 5 days advance warning, you make sure no one shows up for another 5 days after the event. Make sure it's chaos. Make sure those poor people get run out of their homes. Make sure that rich developers can take over that property and make a lot of money out of it. And you can break the political Democratic lock on Louisiana by distributing all those blacks who vote Democratic all over the country.
Well, it's a tragic situation, but unfortunately this sort of thing happens. And if you really study what happened to Katrina, we've never gotten the entire story. The amazing thing is that it was after the storm had passed that, of course, the dikes gave way. And they didn't give way in one place. They gave way in several places spontaneously exactly the same time. How could that possibly have happened? And then, of course, they brought in the Blackwater mercenaries to go patrol the streets. Professional mercenary killers disarming the American people. And where was the outcry from the general population? Why, we were too stunned at the tragedy of New Orleans to ask what really happened. Well, Jim, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. We've covered a lot of things tonight, but it's always a pleasure. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Oh, Stan, it's great to be on with you. Yeah, I would simply encourage anyone who wants to know more about 9/11 to go to the site for scholars.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us.
Their compliant attorney general simply declined to declare it to be a crime scene, in which case you can only investigate accident-compatible alternatives, such as that it was the weather, the plane, or the pilots, which is exactly what happened in the case of Paul Wellstone. No investigation was given to the possibility it could have been a small bomb or a gas canister or some kind of high-tech weapon.
Sure.
And here's the second and final startling fact. NTSB reports, Stan, believe it or not, are not admissible in courts of law. So we have these investigations, and we think they're all serious and legal and binding, and in fact, they're not even admissible as evidence.
Well, there's so much more, but we'll have to have that for another time. God bless. Good night, Jim. Talk
Thanks
to you
so
later.
Thanks so much, Stan.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly these are not nice things to talk about, but we have to face reality. There really is evil in the world. We have a great four-tape set. It's entitled The Deadly Assassins. It's actually an interview with a gentleman who talked to a man who said he had been ordered to kill General George Patton. And so I think we carry the book, Target Patton, and we even have that interview is in a four-tape set on Deadly Assassins. We have a four-tape set on the murder of Martin Luther King, and of course that gets into the cover-up of this trial. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on the murder of Bobby Kennedy. And, of course, that we carry the book, RFK Must Die. And the book is called Who Killed Bobby? We carry a DVD, RFK Must Die. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, these are not imaginary things. There really is a group of people out there who will kill indiscriminately. And we, literally in this four-tape set on Deadly Assassins, we really go into 20 or 30 people who've died. Sonny Bono, so many of the people had died during the Clinton administration. They had a list somewhere between 50 and 100 people who'd actually been killed during the Clinton administration. Monica Lewinsky even had that list and gave it to Linda Tripp and said, "You really want to testify against the president? Here's a list of the people who have already died." And of course, Linda Tripp did go ahead and testify against Bill Clinton. But we don't talk about those things anymore. They're not nice to talk about. We'd much rather talk about Madonna and Britney Spears and Brad Pitts and Michael Jackson. Well, you really need to get the material we've talked about. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. A four CD set on the murder of Bobby Kennedy, on the Deadly Assassins, certainly the four CD or tape set on Martin Luther King. We have a four CD set, we have four tape sets on JFK Assassination and JFK Assassination Update. The information is there. You need to get it. We've got a great DVD on the assassination of John Kennedy. We carry the book, although they're just about out now. Killzone, a sniper looks at Dealey Plaza. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get into the sources behind all of this. My talk or my book on the Brotherhood of Darkness goes into the secret societies and satanic organizations. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are satanic organizations and occult organizations and witchcraft covens and people who worship a different god. If you want to understand who Barack Obama is, you really need to get our talk on the financial Armageddon, because, of course, we explained to you who got Obama into power. And that's financial Armageddon, the talk or the syllabus. My talk on the Forbidden Secret and The Syllabus Goes With That and so much more available by going to our website at radioliberty.com. Just read down, look at the material we have there, and we list all our tape sets, all our DVDs, certainly on our 4 tape sets. But you've got to help us get the information out. You have our permission to copy anything we have personally made and distributed, as long as you're not selling the things. But help us get the truth out. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. That's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Barry Shamish. And Barry is an Israeli patriot who has been living in Israel for many years, writing about the politics over there and the corruption, wrote extensively about the murder, the assassination of Rabin, who is the prime minister, and this was in the mid-1990s, I think it was 1995, but Barry will correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, but of course, because of threats against Barry's life, he was forced to come to the United States. But Israel's loss certainly is our gain, so we'd like to have Barry on every week or so, or at least once a week, to keep us abreast of what's really going on in the Holy Land. Because, well, you know, from a Christian point of view, why, of course, this is really the center of what's going on. We believe that history will be determined by what happens there. We think that it's a very unsettled time, a very dangerous time, that Israel certainly is in danger today. We believe that God brought the children of Israel back after 2,000 years of being away from the land, but now they're there. And, of course, there are many, many people who do everything they can to destroy Israel and the population there. I know Barry feels very strongly because his former wife and his children still live there, his friends live there. But Israel is certainly under attack today. But not only from without, but from within, because there are many people working at the highest level of the Israeli government who seem to have a different agenda as far as the future of Israel is concerned. With that as a background, Barry, you pick up the story. There we are. Okay, Barry, go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can certainly hear you.
All right. There's lots of stories. And this is going to be a very, very fateful week for Israel. Obama, of course, met Medvedev today in Moscow. And, of course, the number one topic was the Middle East. Wouldn't you know it? They said that they were talking mostly about Iran, but the whole Middle East, that's what they were talking about. All the other stuff, well, you know, the nukes and the old stuff, you know, disarmament and the nonsense. They were talking Middle East. The rest was just window dressing. Now, from Moscow, Obama goes to the G8 conference north of Rome. It's in Italy this year, July 8th to 10th, where the main topic will be the Middle East. All over again, that's, you look at all the agendas, they're there to talk the Middle East. And, by the way, what the Middle East means is that Israel retreats to impossible borders, and I mean, the squeeze on Israel from the G8 is going to be huge. Throw Moscow in there, and you're getting everybody involved, but the big one, of course, on July 10th, this Friday, Obama meets the Pope. And, oh, I hear the music already.
Yes, you do. Well, what do you think is going to happen when Obama meets the Pope?
They're going to declare that Israel has got to divide Jerusalem, separate itself from Judea and Samaria, the works. And this is going to be everybody now, the Russians, the G8, the Vatican, everybody is going to go down in Israel this week.
All right. Hold on. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Sammons right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Barry, you pick up the story. So basically, there's going to be a meeting this Friday when Barack Obama meets the Pope, and you think that they're going to, of course, call then for pulling the people out of the settlements there in Judea and Samaria, and then, of course, to make more concessions and to divide Jerusalem?
Yeah, they're going to call in all the chips. There's no fooling around now. They've got the forces of the world meeting to discuss Israel's stubborn little stance. The Pope and Obama are going to come to a full agreement that they'll work together to divide Jerusalem. The Vatican wants the Jews out of Jerusalem. They want to replace them. They want to be the guardian of the holy sites. And, you know, it seems in retrospect that their plans are impossible and unrealistic, but these are the Vatican plans. So you are going to get America and the Catholic world and the G8, which includes Japan. You're going to get everybody all over the world after Israel. This Friday is going to be a bad day. Everyone's going to go after Israel. Now, there's a very peculiar, very, very peculiar story that took place just before the papal meeting. And, well, I mean, peculiar. There is a group called the Pave the Way Foundation. You've never heard it. Somehow or another, they're very powerful. Don't even ask why. Okay? Somehow they have convinced the attaché of the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem to announce plans to nominate Pope Pius XII, the Holocaust Pope, none other than the Holocaust Pope, and, well, I mean, he was just the Nazi savior. I mean, he sent the Nazis out through his, after the war ended, out through his monasteries throughout the world. I mean, he was the Nazi Pope. This organization is going to try and make Pope Pius XII a righteous among the nations honor. Now, what that means is that if you're a Gentile who saved Jews during the Holocaust at great cost to yourself and risk, you became a righteous Gentile. It's a tremendous honor that's about to be smeared. Now, this organization... So I did a little searching.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and suddenly Barry's talking about an organization. And is it pave the way, or is pave the way? Is that right?
Well, they want Yad Vashem to open up an investigation that will lead to Pope Pius XII named a righteous Gentile of the Holocaust.
Now, we know apparently the term righteous Gentile is a very honored term among the Jews. They're to honor the Gentiles who actually protected the Jews, many of them, of course, at great expense to themselves. Certainly the story of Corrie ten Boom, and we of course interviewed other people who actually risked their lives to help the Jews during the time of the Holocaust, and of course, but now these people are honored by the Jewish nation as righteous Gentiles. And what you're suggesting is that they want to give that honor to Pope Pius XII. Is that right?
Yes, and of course the current Pope Benedict is trying to make him a saint, and I guess you just can't make him a saint if the Jews know that he was a mass murderer. I've been giving out a book by Avril Manhattan on the Pope's role in the Croatian slaughter of the Serbs, 850,000, including 30,000 Jews, which came right from Pope Pius XII. He was a mass murderer.
Well, now, what part did he play, and is there documentation that he played a part in the slaughter that took place in Croatia?
Oh, my. Should I send you the book?
Yes, I'd love to see it. But tell me what the book
part?
Says.
It was his idea. It came right from the Vatican. To go into Croatia, I could do a whole show on that if you would like. But to go into the Vatican's desire to form a Catholic nation and get rid of Yugoslavia and kill any Serb who opposed the Croatian Catholics. Well, another time. Let's do this another time. All I'm saying is that Pope Pius XII has got a record of butchery that makes an absolute farce.
Well, now, of course, were Croatia, were these Greek Orthodox Catholics rather than Roman Catholics?
They were Catholic Catholics.
They were
Rome.
Catholic Catholics, okay.
Oh, boy, then we'll do another show on this.
All right, fine.
This one, if you're asking if they're Greek Orthodox, you don't know, but the Ustashi and the Holocaust of Croatia from 1941 to 45.
Well, we do know, of course, that there was certainly an SS unit or certainly a German military unit made up primarily of Croatians who actually served the Nazis. Isn't that right?
No, the Nazis left. They were all on their own. Now, of course, they were allied with the Nazis.
Right.
But they slaughtered in the most inhumane ways every Serb they could get their hands on, and they killed all the Jews as well.
Well, now, were the Serbs a Greek Orthodox, or were they Catholic as well? What were the Serbs?
Were Greek Orthodox.
They were Greek Orthodox. So the Roman Catholics wanted to kill the Greek, and then, of course, they'd want to kill the Bosnians because they were Muslim. Is that right?
That wasn't part of the equation.
You go right ahead.
They didn't kill the Muslims.
Okay, go ahead.
They killed the Serbs and the Jews. Wow. I'll send you the book. You'll be Avril Manhattan, the Vatican's Holocaust, a nasty, horrible piece of history deliberately rubbed out, and you're on my list. You'll get the book. But back we go to the main point. To get Israel to play along with the Vatican's plans, they've got to turn the Holocaust Pope into a saint. Because that's what Benedict, ex-Nazi, I mean, he volunteered for the Wehrmacht. So you've got Benedict the 16th is trying to turn Pius the 12th into a saint. He wants to canonize him. Now, suddenly comes a Jewish group. Now, I did a little checking. Gary Krupp is the leader of this Jewish group. The Pave the Way Foundation, he is one of the two Jewish papal knights. He's a papal knight.
Why would a Jewish person be a papal knight?
Two of them are. Rabbi Rosen, David Rosen and Gary Krupp are papal knights because they serve the Vatican. Why else would they be? They've been very loyal servants to the Vatican.
All right, it was a rhetorical question. I wanted you to say that. Go right ahead.
Look, Yad Vashem was the honored place of the memory of the Holocaust, and it's been doing some pretty bad things. Now, again, I don't want to do the whole story of Rudolf Kastner, the representative of the Jewish agency who negotiated with Eichmann to save the Hungarian Jews. And he let Eichmann literally slaughter 800,000, and he kept 3,500 friends and family and sent them back to Palestine. Yad Vashem are trying to turn him into a hero as well. There's something, there is a horrible inner politics inside the Holocaust right now in Jerusalem. They're trying to change history.
You're talking about now the people who run the Holocaust Museum.
Yad Vashem, yes.
Okay, fine.
And they're trying to change the true history of the Holocaust into something that never existed by raising the likes of Pius XII and Rudolf Kastner into hero status when they were just cowardly murderers.
Well, I'm sure many of the Catholic listeners would be very incensed by what you have to say, but you go ahead and tell your story.
Well, no, what's it got to do with Catholics? Catholics don't understand. Look, I was in Italy 3 times in the last 5-6 years. I'm crazy about the place. It's a wonderful place. I get along beautifully with it. They know the Vatican is some foreign and very, very corrupt source of their religion, but they don't take part in these machinations. It's got nothing to do with Catholics. Catholics haven't got a clue. Let's just leave it at this. Israel's got some very corrupt politicians, and the Israeli people are not taking part in the corruption, and the same goes with the Catholics.
And I'd say the same thing goes here in America. We've got some terribly corrupt people in key positions in government, but the average American could not be blamed. They just don't understand what's going on. So pick up the story there.
Yeah, I mean, you can't start calling this prejudicial stuff. I'm just telling you the news. You can take it any way you want, but certainly the Catholic people are not who I'm talking about.
I know you're not. Okay, go right ahead.
Now, we've got a situation where this is going to be a very rough week for Israel. Very, very rough. And you've got the Pope meeting Obama, and they are going to come out with some terrible, terrible resolutions that are just horrible for Israel. And you've got a Jewish organization that is trying to whitewash Pope Benedict and Pope Pius. You know, it gets even worse than this. And next time I write something, I'm going to include something that was just sent to me this week. I've known about it for a while, but I got the proof this week. And that is that Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, in 1988, he appears in the annual report of the Council on Foreign Relations as a member. And I've got it.
Who is this?
Netanyahu?
No, Netanyahu. Okay, fine. Well, I wouldn't be surprised. We've always figured he was a tool of the council. I never knew he was a member. Is he a current member? Or was
no.
This just,
1 year, 1988.
Okay, fine. Go right ahead.
Well, I'm going to reprint that the next time I write something because he is playing a terrible double game right now.
Well, I'm sure many of the Israelis really feel that he's an Israeli patriot. He's going to take a strong stand, try to preserve their country, without realizing, of course, he's a tool of the globalists, of Henry Kissinger and the elitists, and he will do their bidding all the time, pretending that he's going to be doing what's best for Israel as he systematically betrays your country.
Oh, terrible. And, you know, when he was first elected in 1997, No, May of 96 was when he was first elected. They researched Netanyahu, the Israeli media, and they found out in America he had 3 separate Social Security numbers. Now, what he was doing with 3 Social Security numbers, there was a lot of speculation that he was a CIA spy or an asset. And he never explained what he was doing with 3 separate Social Security numbers. Well, I met Netanyahu. It's not a bad little story. This was before Rabin's assassination. I had written a book called The Fall of Israel about corruption, and I had started a newsletter where we're trying to follow these politicians, and I found absolute proof that Netanyahu was flying to England and conducting secret negotiations with Lord Levy, if I'm not mistaken. Oops, I hear the music.
You go right ahead, I'll tell you when we got to cut off.
Right. So I met Netanyahu in Beit Shemesh. There was a small gathering there, and he knew me. He knew my work. And I was very flattered by this. He knew my book. And I said to him, why have you been going to England and not telling the Israeli people about these negotiations with Lord Levy? He denied it outright. And I knew he was lying. My sources were better than him. He was conducting secret negotiations even before he became prime minister.
All right, hang on. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish here at Radio Liberty. Well, Barry, go right ahead.
Well, Netanyahu gave a little speech this week where he names his accomplishments.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Why, of course, I've got a great bridge here across the Monterey Bay. We'd love to sell them. But the thing is that Joe Biden would not have made that statement without the full knowledge and consent of the Obama administration. Of course, they disassociate themselves from what Joe Biden said. Well, that's his opinion. He's the Vice President of the United States. He says absolutely nothing without the permission of the administration. And then, of course, the story that the Mossad has made an agreement with the Saudis that they could overfly Saudi Arabia in their trip to go to bomb Iran. Why would they put this story out? And then, of course, Saudi Arabia denies that they have an agreement with the Mossad. Obviously, they are focusing our attention on the possibility of an Israeli attack on Iran. And the question is, why are they doing it, Barry?
That's a good one. Look, I don't know everything. I just know what's going on.
Well, it may very well be a cover for something else, and I think that we have to realize...
Well, it's not an attack.
Right.
I mean, my point is, and I do know something about the Israeli army. We kept our mouths shut when we were serious. And when the mouth is wide open, like what's happened this week, you are not serious. And by the way, that's solid rule.
And I think you're absolutely right. In other words, of course, if you're talking about it, you're not going to do it. If you're not talking about it, then maybe you are. And this is a pretty standard procedure. So they get all of the benefits of by talking about it. But, of course, I think it's got to be something far larger than Israel. I think that certainly something big is afoot, and they're going to divert our attention on the threat of an Israeli attack on Iran. The question is, what are they covering for? This is certainly my take on this. Something else as big as in the offering, we'll know about it here when it occurs.
Well, this is a very fateful week for Israel. On Friday, Israel is going to be ostracized if it doesn't play ball with the Vatican, CFR, the G8, Moscow, everybody. If Israel doesn't play ball, Israel is going to, it's going to suffer the wrath of the world.
But, of course, Barry, the leaders of Israel will go along with this. The leaders of Israel are not Israeli patriots. They have sold their souls, and my way of thinking, to the globalists. I think that the strong spiritual forces behind this globalist movement, and I think Netanyahu will do what he is told to do, don't you?
Well, as I said, 1988, he was an actual member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He really belongs to these people, which isn't properly understood. This business, he's being portrayed as a patriot, and he's not a patriot. He has very different loyalties. And you can't get Israelis to understand this, by the way, at all, that you really can be a Jew, you can be an Israeli, and you can actually have first loyalty to a globalism that is entirely un-Jewish. Israelis can't understand it. It doesn't fit their way of thinking. I understand it, and as I said, Netanyahu will play ball. He's just setting up the country to play ball with him.
And, Chris, you know, I have the same problem that you do, Barry. I mean, I know that there are people in the highest positions of our government who have no loyalty to the United States. They are globalists, just as Netanyahu is. But their loyalty is not to this country. They'll talk about patriotism, they'll wave the flag, they'll have a little button there on the lapel, the American flag button, but they don't believe in America. They have a different loyalty. And until people understand that there are people all throughout the world who are dedicated to this idea of a one world government, a one world financial system, a one world currency, and of course a one world religion. Until people understand that, so much of what's going on really doesn't make any sense. And once you understand it, why, everything begins to fit into a pattern. The progressive betrayal of America, the collapse of our monetary system, the fact that they say they're trying to solve the problem and doing everything wrong, the Hope for Homeowners program supposed to help 400,000 homeowners, and, well, there was one homeowner had his mortgage renegotiated. Our telephone number is, well, when we give it, when we get back here in just a moment with Barry Shamus. And this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening, Barry Shamus. We're talking about this coming week with Israel. This is going to be a very, very important week, and of course a very serious question as to what's going to happen. Barry thinks that the agreement is going to be made to partition Jerusalem and of course to force the settlers certainly out of Judea and Samaria. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess Barry Shamus. Barry, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your books, how they can get your DVDs, how they can get your website, and how they can schedule you to come and talk to one of their audiences that they'd like.
Sure. The newest book is The Compromised Land, and it's on Amazon as well as Lulu. I'll give you the Lulu address. you go to www.lulu.com, lulu.com. You'll see a search box. Punch in books and then my name. C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That's Chamish. And, you know, to download, it's like $7. It's not a lot of money. Sent to your home is a little more, but you'll see all my books there. My website is BarryChamish.com. And, yeah, if you want to invite me to lecture or get the DVDs that Lulu doesn't sell, my number is 904-315-8079. That's 904-315-8079. And now let's go back to, let's take what appears to be trivial, but it's not very trivial to the people who actually live this, and look at the breakdown in Israel. I mean, this is not what you're going to hear from anyone, but it's darn serious stuff. The police, nobody trusts them. All the polls show nobody trusts the police now. They've sunk to like 15% trust of the Israeli public. Now, just a couple of examples. There was a feud in Jerusalem this past weekend where two Arab families in the Jerusalem suburb of Silwan started shooting automatic rifles and grenades. Two were dead, five seriously wounded, the Jews of Ir David inside Silwan phoned the police. The police wouldn't interfere. They didn't come out to save lives.
Well, no, I mean, were these Arabs killing Arabs, or were these Arabs killing Jews?
No, these were Arabs killing Arabs, but the Jews were in terrible danger.
Sure, go ahead.
It was a family feud. But nonetheless, the police have to put down that kind of violence. The police wouldn't come. Now, there's the same thing has happened in the Galilee and in the Negev, where farmers have been threatened to leave their land. And this has gone on now for a number of years, where Bedouin would steal their livestock and would threaten them to leave, that it was their land, and get out of here, and vicious, vicious stuff.
And Barry, I'm going to have to ask you to tell me, where is the Negev desert? I mean, I know...
The Negev is the desert in the south of the country.
In the south of the country, okay. That's south of Jerusalem? Is that south of... is that down by Hebron? Where is it?
No, it's nowhere near... Well, everything's near there, but the Negev takes up over half of Israel. Begins, Beersheba down to Eilat. It's the Negev.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
Neither here nor there. The farmers could not get the police to protect them. And they were losing a fortune in livestock. They were running away. Finally, the farmers formed their own police. They got hundreds of volunteers. They call themselves the New Guardians. And when a farmer is threatened by the Bedouin, they call up their own police. They don't trust the Israeli police because they never show up. It's the same in Jerusalem. The police did not break up this blood feud. You have a situation in Israel. I'll give another example. We all know about Gush Katif, the Jews of Gaza were forced out of their homes. This was 4 years ago, and I wrote a book about this called "Bye Bye Gaza," where I explained how the Israeli leadership managed to persuade the country to tolerate the forced evacuation of 10,000 Jews from Gaza and northern Samaria. Well, after 4 years of being lied to, they've been living, the majority have been living in shabby trailers from beautiful villas. I mean, Gush Katif was a gorgeous area. Well, they were forced out of their homes literally at gunpoint. The guns would have come out if they had refused, but they didn't. They walked into the buses in a very shameful way. But after 4 years, it had enough. Now, certain families were promised full compensation by the government if they left before the army came in. And you had communities, really secular Jews, in the Gaza Strip. Places, well, you probably don't even know the place. They're all gone now. Nisanit, Dugit, Rafik Yam. I mean, they're all gone. They used to be thriving villages, with the highest standard of living, available in Israel. They produced 25% of Europe's winter flowers, and then poof, it was gone. Now, these people who voluntarily left were promised immediate compensation, and they're no different than everyone else. Whether you were forced out or whether you voluntarily left, the government screwed you.
In other words, the government lied to them?
Every one of them, of course. Every one of them. Every one of them, complete. They got no compensation. They were forced into hotels when, after a week, they were forced out and they had nowhere to go. They, the settlers initially just put up tents. They had nowhere to live. They were not compensated. Now, 25 families, which I guess adds up to 200-300 people, from the Gaza Strip had enough. They said that's it, no more, and they put up tents in plots in the Galilee that the government said they could buy and build houses for. Well, they can't. They can't for a variety of reasons, even get a mortgage. One of the reasons, uncannily, they still haven't paid the mortgages off on the destroyed houses. One of the tremendous ironies of Israel is the army comes in, destroys the house, bulldozes the house, but the banks had nothing to do with this, and these people still have to pay their mortgages. Even though, of course, they didn't have any more homes, they still had to pay the mortgages. If you can believe
that is the ultimate in irony.
This is a little beyond the irony, but it's the ultimate in something. It's certainly an insult. Well, they can't get new mortgages because suddenly they were unemployed and couldn't pay back the old mortgages. And then the government devaluated their homes so that the mortgages that they were entitled to couldn't buy a shack in Israel. And on top of that, these are people in their 50s who had established careers, and they couldn't get work anymore. They used to grow flowers. They couldn't even get a kibbutz to use their expertise to grow flowers. They couldn't because they were banned. The kibbutzim of Israel banned them. And after 4 years, lo and behold, 200 of these evacuees, 70% of whom do not work. It's that simple. They were too old to work. Just said enough is enough. They went to the plot of the land, the plots of land the government promised them to build a new communities, and they're going to live on them in tents until the army comes and forces them out of the tents, which, by the way, you can expect that. It's on the list of priorities to shoo them away. These people are living like hobos in their own country because their own army destroyed their homes and their own banks made them pay their mortgages and their own kibbutzim wouldn't let them work because they were religious and they have nowhere to go anymore and they're now squatting on the land the government should have given them as compensation 4 years ago.
You know, that's really very interesting. I have a list of the American members of the Trilateral Commission and who should be a member of the American branch. They're actually, of course, European and Asian branch, but who should be a member of the American branch of the of Trilateral Commission but the head of the Bank of Israel? Chair, wonder what he's doing.
Yaakov Frankel.
I've forgotten his name. I don't have it.
His name is Yaakov Frankel.
Okay, right. Anyway, go right ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah, Yaakov Frankel. Oh, you know what? Yaakov Frankel was at the World Bank, and he was taken straight from the World Bank and put into the Bank of Israel. All of Israel's heads of its central bank come from Washington. This is just standard procedure in Israel.
I thought Israel was running Washington, D.C. Are you suggesting that Washington runs Israel?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know what? Yaakov Frankel was the one before. I know who you're talking about. I wrote about him. Nasty, nasty, nasty person. He was at the IMF. Oh, my goodness. What's his name?
Well, anyway, if anybody wants to look it up, you go
it's
to AugustReview.com. That's, oh, pardon me, AugustReview.org, AugustReview.org, and go try to get from them the membership list, American membership list, 2009, of the Trilateral Commission. You'll find the head of the Bank of Israel there. That's just a strange coincidence going along, as I thought of that when you were telling me how the bankers are demanding that these people whose homes have been bulldozed still have to pay the mortgage. Go right ahead.
Well, yeah, I suppose, mortgage banks and the Bank of Israel are different. Mortgage banks are private.
Yeah, but usually, of course, the chief banks interlock with the central banks, at least they do here in the United States.
Yeah, there's, you climb the ladder. It could have been policy. It actually could have come from the top. I'm not aware of this, but it actually could have been a national policy. Certainly the rest of the utter torture of the most patriotic Israelis, were the Israelis from the Gaza Strip. And they have been just tortured, for the last 4 years. Maybe it was high-level policy. But I don't know the answer to that. But you're right about the Bank of Israel being run by the World Bank. You know, let's talk World Bank if you want to talk World Bank.
Okay, let's talk World Bank. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's not just we discussed this. It's a different audience, so I can rediscuss it. That the World Bank has decided in favor of funding the Red Dead Canal. That is, now to explain this, and I've done it on your show, the World Bank is going to put in $7 billion of a $15 billion project between Israel, the Jordanians, and the Palestinian Authority to bring water from the Red Sea using gravity to the Dead Sea, which is drying up.
And are they going to put in a big pipe, or are they going to just dig
a ditch
or some canal? Okay.
It's like what they've got planned is a resort. There'll be beautiful fishing spots. I've seen their PR. They've got like steamboats on this canal. Beautiful agriculture based on desalinated Red Sea water, which is a joke, unless you want to pay $1 a bottle for desalinated water, you're not going to grow anything from this. The energy to create that bottle of water is not going to be used for agriculture. But nonetheless, that's the way they're selling it. It just looks terrific. You get in your George Jetson flying car, and you swirl around this futuristic a city in the desert based on this canal. Now, I have gone into the environmental side because I really knew something about the environmental side, and I'll talk about it briefly. In short, before I talk about what I know, Mariv, second biggest newspaper in Israel, wrote this week that it's an environmental disaster to build this canal. But the Jordanians want it built, and the Israelis are having a hard time getting out of it. That's the story they told. Now,
I think people have to understand that certainly the Dead Sea is drying up. This is an idea. They're going to solve the problem by bringing in seawater, which has much less salt than, of course, the Dead Sea. But as Barry has pointed out, and he did an analysis of this some years ago, why, of course, the water from the seawater will not mix with the Dead Sea water. There's going to be a chemical reaction. What are the environmental implications of this thing, Barry?
Well, environmental, this has been, and it's not my study. I worked for the Israel Bonds when they were going to fund this thing, and I read the environmental effects. And by the way, Israel Bonds walked out of this thing over the environmental effects largely. What you have is a greenhouse effect. And they use this to build solar energy ponds. They actually built, a scientist named Branover built a whole farm next to the Dead Sea using normal seawater or freshwater on top of Dead Sea water. How much time do we have?
Well, we've only got, just for this section of the program, about 20 seconds, so we'll just hold off on this. But Barry is talking. The World Bank's going to put up $7 billion towards building this canal. But this has been known for a long time. This is going to be an environmental disaster. They can paint all the pictures they want to of what it's going to be, but this is not the solution for the Dead Sea. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish to wrap up the program. Go right ahead, Barry.
Okay, in short.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Make some drastic agreements as far as Israel is concerned. Israel isn't being consulted, but of course Israel is going to have to give up their settlements in the occupied area. They're going to have to divide Jerusalem. Going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, but Barry's been telling us about these things for a long time. Several years ago he told us what was happening to the Sea of Galilee and certainly to the Dead Sea, and now these things have come to pass. Understand that Israel is sort of like a canary in the mine shaft of the world. We are living not only in exciting and dangerous and critical and frightening times, we're living in prophetic times. If you've not yet seen our 10 DVD series with Pastor Billy Crone called The Final Countdown, we think that you ought to get it. It will give you insight into what's happening, not only from the point of view of secret societies and the things we talk about, but also from God's plan for mankind at this time in history. The Final Countdown, part one, 5 DVDs, part two, 5 DVDs, you get the two of them together, a Final Countdown special, we recommend it. You need to understand that things that are happening today have prophetic significance. You can't understand so much what's going on today unless you understand that, or the history that led us up to where we are today. So if you'd like to get the Final Countdown, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. To put things into their spiritual perspective, we hope that maybe you'll get our book, Brotherhood of Darkness and or The Talk. If you can't afford The Talk, you can go to our website of radioliberty.com and scroll down to the Brotherhood of Darkness DVD. Of course, you can go to scroll down to videos, and then you scroll videos till you get to the Brotherhood of Darkness. Watch The Talk. The book came from The Talk. We have another talk called The Forbidden Secret. We think it's very important. There's a syllabus that goes with that. We have another talk that explains to you who Barack Obama really is. Why is he the President of the United States? Is there a spiritual force behind Barack Obama? The DVD is called The Forbidden Secret. And, of course, pardon me, the DVD is called The Financial Armageddon. And there's a syllabus that goes with that, which has a lot of very, very famous speeches and other information. The things that I think are really important, it contains Alan Greenspan's article on gold and freedom. It actually has the speech given by Andrew Jackson in 1837, speech given by Congressman McFadden in 1932 that cost him his life. He was killed 4 years later. And then, of course, the speech given by Congressman Wright Patton in 1964. You need to have this information to understand what's going on today, because today you are seeing the final battle in the war that Andrew Jackson waged back in the 1830s. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. We are going to have some very, very difficult times. We recommend that people certainly get a Berkey water filter. You want to have a means so you can have potable water. and then lay in a supply of long-term storage foods. You get the wholesale prices that are offered by Ready Reserve Foods if you contact Radio Liberty at 1-800-544-8927. You need to start laying in the health products that you need. We recommend the vitamin D3 at 5,000 units. We take that. If we start to come down with a cold, that along with Alabiotic, which is alabiotic, not antibiotic, but alabiotic combination of oil of oregano and certainly garlic and oil of elderberry and other items. But you're going to need to be able to get your immune system working. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision,